Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd. On the Double with the Double S Express.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to On the Double with the Double S Express. And right now, I guess I have to say that second S belongs to Corey Sullivan, which begins with an S. Corey, what's going on? Thanks for hopping in tonight. Joining me here, Sean Wally, On the Double.
Man, I'm having a great day. It's a Monday. It's the official anniversary of Kobe putting up 81 on Jalen Rose. So it's a good day.
Wow, look at you, youngster, bringing up some history here tonight.
Yeah, history. Speaking of history, getting into the conference championships, we had the Patriots comeback victory in Foxborough by Tom Brady beating the Jags. What did you think of that game?
You know, Corey, it's not like I dislike being right, but the entire game I was telling a buddy of mine, I said, I want the Jags to win, but the way this is going, it's setting up to be a typical Patriot game, just like the Atlanta game last year, just like, unfortunately, the Seahawks Super Bowl a few years ago, where Tom Brady's going to get down and he's going to will his team back to victory, and that's exactly what happened. And it's frustrating for everybody that's not a Patriots fan.
I agree with you. It was kind of expected, like you said. You look at Jacksonville, and they're a good young team, kind of like the Seahawks were back when they were in 2013, 2014, in those Super Bowl days, and even before then when they were first forming. And they just weren't able to beat those teams like the Falcons that were more experienced. Tony Gonzalez was there then. And, yeah, I think, you know, you hit it on the head. Tom Brady is just – he's amazing. This is, you know, there's nothing else really to say about that. You can't argue with how well him and Bill Belichick have done together. And to be 40 years old and pretty much smooth sailing through the playoffs once again in dominant fashion is something to say in and of itself. So I'm glad that we're watching greatness. But, yeah, it's not fun to watch the Patriots, you know, pretty much dominate the league every single year.
Tom Brady reaching his 8th Super Bowl. Can you believe that? 8th in 16 years. Are you kidding me? That's basically 50, that's exactly 50% of the time he's in the big game. Just remarkable.
That is a great career. And then you know you think about the Super Bowl coming up. We also had the Minnesota Vikings Eagles game, I think. There was something held. I don't think Minnesota really showed up to 38-7. Were you surprised at all by the blowout?
Big time. I understand that the Eagles were underdogs at home, which doesn't happen very often, and they took that to heart. Yet, Minnesota, man, I mean, if they could have played in their own stadium for the Super Bowl, I don't care who they would have been playing, they should have been able to dominate that game, being the first team ever to play in their own stadium for a Super Bowl. Yet they barely showed up. Outside of that very first offensive drive when they drove down the field and scored, where was their defense from the entire season?
Yeah, I feel the exact same way. But also, you think about the quarterback play. Case Keenum isn't your typical Super Bowl caliber quarterback, and not that Nick Foles is, but you know that goes more to show how much more favored the Patriots should be heading into this Super Bowl championship game. I mean, you think of all the Super Bowl quarterbacks, you think of, you know, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, even Flacco, Roethlisberger, Russell Wilson. You don't really think of Case Keenum or Nick Foles being in that every year conversation of a Super Bowl caliber team. So it's going to be tough. Definitely David versus Goliath and the Patriots returning to the Super Bowl to defend their title. But I think that, yeah, what you said was perfect. The Eagles just dominated, and the Vikings defense was nowhere to be found. 38 points is unacceptable even for any game in general, but for a playoff game, 38 is too much, especially in a blowout. Playoffs is usually closer games, so I was disappointed in that, to say the least.
It's got to be super frustrating, not only for Vikings fans, but the players themselves, the coaches that have watched this team all year be a dominant defense, try to get back to the purple people eaters they were in the 70s, and they're leading the league in so many categories. And you watch that game yesterday in Philadelphia, the NFC Championship, and they couldn't even tackle a basic thing that you've learned since peewee football, how to wrap somebody up, tackle, lead with the shoulder, and they're just trying to arm tackle the entire time. It's not like the weather was a factor. It's not like it was that cold. It was in the high 40s. You can't ask for better weather in January in Philadelphia.
Yeah, there really is no excuse to get blown out like that in a playoff game. Every man, this is what they play for, to go to the Super Bowl. You saw Jay Ajayi after the game just so overwhelmed with joy to be going to the Super Bowl, and to not even show up is baffling.
So now we have Super Bowl 52 set for that gorgeous new stadium in Minneapolis. The Patriots and the Eagles. I think that if Nick Foles can play like he did yesterday for the Eagles, they have a shot. If they can play mistake-free football, which I'm sure going back and looking at the tape today or tomorrow, the coaches for Philly will find some issues and find areas they could have done things better. Nobody's ever 100% perfect, but if they can stay mistake-free and their defense can play close to what they did to the Vikings, they've got a good shot.
I mean, it sounds good, but to beat Tom Brady in the Super Bowl is pretty impossible. Only Eli Manning has done it. And you generally just don't see mediocre at best quarterbacks like Foles or like Case Keenum really take their team over the top and win the Super Bowl. Peppered in there are some Brad Johnsons and, Trent Dilfer, one of those guys that's won a Super Bowl but isn't the greatest. And I just don't see either of these teams making it to the Super Bowl and beating Tom Brady. So I think the Patriots are going to be heavily favored. And, you saw the same at the end of the game with Bortles as he choked. To say the least, that's what you live for. That's what the playoffs are all about. And he just didn't show up for the moment. And that's the thing about Tom Brady, is he always shows up for those moments. And especially in the big games, it's what he thrives. It's what makes him Tom Brady. And I can't see Nick Foles beating Tom Brady in the big game.
Well, if you think about it, Nick Foles has to beat the Patriot defense. Nick Foles himself doesn't necessarily battle Tom Brady, at least on the field at the same time. So the Patriot defense isn't exactly the most dominant in the league, and we've seen them many times fall behind, just like they did to Jacksonville, and then Tom Brady has to will them back. Now, it's just, we'll have to see. It's not very often that the Patriots come out and take a 30-3 lead. They're normally on the wrong end of that, and then the second half they crank up the fire and we know what's going to happen. So, it happened last Super Bowl. It happened yesterday. So we'll see how everything shakes out in 2 weeks in Minnesota.
Well, I'm excited for it. I can't wait. I think it's going to be a great battle, and it would be nice for somebody to contend with the Patriots, for the Eagles to, come up on a Super Bowl championship trophy, but I'm just saying I believe the odds are against them heavily.
Oh, of course. Anytime you have a team as battle-tested, tried and true, and that's been to umpteen Super Bowls in the last decade, 10, 15 years, like the Patriots have, the experience weighs heavily on who's going to be favored. And it's a matter of will for the Patriots. Eagles. Can they not get too caught up in, oh my gosh, we're playing Tom Brady and the Patriots, who have been in this game 8 times in Brady's career? So, not a lot of people gave them a big shot yesterday other than Eagles fans. and they proved everybody wrong that was riding Minnesota's wave. Now, you can argue and ponder whether or not the Vikings had a hangover from that emotional high of one of the greatest endings in NFL history with the last second walk-off miracle in Minnesota touchdown to Diggs.
Yeah.
That saved their season and allowed them to play in the championship. What were the odds of that? Just incredible the week before, and yet it almost felt like yesterday they weren't there totally. And I don't understand that. I can't fathom not showing up for a chance to play for a championship, not only for the conference, but going to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I agree. And especially going up against a quarterback that wasn't a starter. You know, with Carson Wentz going down later in the season to see Nick Foles, and there's game film on him. A lot of guys, you know, step into the quarterback position or any position and they find immediate success because there's not a whole lot of game film out on them. But with Nick Foles, that's not really an excuse. And not that he's a terrible quarterback. I don't want to put him out there. He's just out of games. But he's not one of the elite quarterbacks in the league. He's, you know, he's jumped around from team to team because he's replaced. He's not a special talent. But team is in the Super Bowl, so you have to.
Now, of course, for the teams that lost yesterday, the Jaguars and the Vikings, the season ends abruptly and not where they wanted it to. Of course, they all had dreams of getting to the Super Bowl. But my goodness, if you're the Jaguars, you've been irrelevant for a decade, 15 years, easy.
Yeah.
And to bring back that excitement, get the fan base riled up again, and coin your team and your town Saxonville and have that defense that was relentless doing great things until yesterday. You know, there's a lot to be proud of. Hold your head high. And same thing in Minnesota. I mean, how many quarterbacks have they gone through, and they get down to Case Keenum and he plays lights out all year, and he wasn't the problem yesterday. And he wasn't the problem all season.
I don't think he was the problem, but I think he was the problem when the game was on the line. When Tom Brady was on his game at the very end and Case Keenum was nowhere to be found in the clutch time, I think he was detrimental to the team in that instance.
Are you talking Brady and the Patriots playing Jacksonville or Nick Foles and the Eagles playing Minnesota?
Oh, my apologies. I was thinking the Bortles situation with Brady, but just bringing that up for
sure.
In the clutch time, how different players play differently.
And really, you look at Bortles, even on that very last offensive play, there was nothing wrong with that throw. It was a great defensive play. The tip by the defensive back, almost somewhat reminiscent to Seattle, San Francisco in the NFC title game a few years back when Sherman had the tip. So it was a great play by a defender. The ball was not underthrown. It was pretty much where it needed to be. Sure, you could now say, well, if it was a yard or two further or higher, maybe the guy couldn't have got it. But you look at it, the guy made a great play, a great athletic effort to get to that ball.
Yeah, I would say on that throw, but there's a couple of throws, even a whole series of throws before that, that, you know, even let Tom Brady into the game. And it's not just to blame on him. The running game wasn't really going. The play calls were all over the place. So it's not all on him. But, you know, when it was his time to shine, he wasn't there. Simple as that.
Corey Sullivan filling in for Sean Boyd, joining us here on the Double. I am Sean Wally. And, of course, our great production staff at BBS Radio in Paradise, California. Now, Corey, of course, we've talked in length about the Super Bowl being set and the championship day that was yesterday in the NFL. Moving down to the college ranks, a school you know very well, and, of course, you and I met there working for Pac-12 networks. The Washington State Cougars have had some rough times of late with the supposed starting quarterback in waiting, Tyler Helinski, unfortunately, apparently choosing to take his own life. Tough times for the Palouse.
Yeah. And depression is a real thing. I believe that the people that are going through it and believe that they have to take measures into their hands of that magnitude, obviously is a real thing. It's something that they really go through each and every day. And me personally, I don't think that I can speak on it lengthily because I don't go through that. So I've always been an advocate of if you've never been through that, you can maybe understand it to a certain degree, but you can never feel it. And so I'm very sorry for the Helsinki family and for, you know, all of his brothers on the team and everyone connected to that program. But you're right. It puts the Cougs in a bad place. And I would say Pullman is a tough place to live, especially if you're from California like he was. It is a very small place. The apartments that he allegedly live at is literally uphill both ways to and from school. And, you know, things close early. There's not a lot to do. It's a tough place to live, you know, if you don't enjoy life or enjoy things outside. So just really sad for the Helsinki family. I thought he was going to be a good quarterback. Didn't really get a whole fair shot. Never any multiple starts. Would always get thrown into the game in the middle of the game and expected to produce. And for the most part, did. Had a triple overtime victory, but struggled in this bowl game where he couldn't really get anything started. Tavares Martin didn't play. Hercules Mata'afa was suspended for the first half, and they really just didn't have a whole lot for that Michigan State game. A lot of stars missing, and so yeah, I think unfortunately, RIP 3. But you know, the Cougs have to move forward and figure out what they're going to do from here. But what do you think about the whole situation?
You know, Corey, it just goes to show that however things seem from the outside, the old saying, you can't judge a book by its cover, and this fits, unfortunately, here, because you're looking at a guy that played college football, started a game or two this year, won a game, and was the heir apparent to Luke Falk, who's graduated and moving on, or will graduate, yet obviously he wasn't loving life.
Yeah.
And it's very sad that here you have a guy about to take over a Division I football program, and who knows what the future would have held for Tyler. For him to be able to have the reins of the Cougars for what, 2 more years?
Yeah.
And would the NFL be an option? Would he want that to happen? Or might he get his degree and go off into the business world? And to be 21, and, you know, he's got his own family. He's got his younger brother that gave an awesome tweet the other day saying, hey, I'll handle things down here on Earth. You handle things up there. I'll see you next time. Man, you know, it's so unfortunate that so many people think that that's the best way to handle things and not think about the ramifications of your friends, your family, even people you don't know, like all of Coug Nation.
Yeah.
They've been touched and affected by this because, you know what, that's one of their own, one of your own, Corey, as a Wazoo alum, that, you know, you guys are tied together and there's a bond there that, you know, everybody understands. Like you were saying, it's uphill both ways, and that's Pullman is all hills. If you've never been there, it's not, you know, if you go to UW, you go to USC, you go to UCLA, you go to Arizona State, there's still big city all over the place.
Yeah.
So it's not that different than normal life if you grew up in suburbia or even a big city. But the love-hate relationship everybody has with Pullman, and I just talked to a Cougar alum the other night that said this, and you can maybe confirm or deny if you feel the same way, that there is a love-hate relationship with Pullman because you love to hate it and you hate to love it because you have to learn – especially if you go there straight out of high school and you go there for 4 years, you have to learn how to live on your own in the middle of nowhere. You don't have the creature comforts of, hey, mom and dad are 10 minutes away, half an hour away. They're going to do my laundry for me. They're still going to provide me with food for the week. You have to figure things out in a hurry and, yes, walk uphill and figure out where everything is on campus and deal with the cold. And, you know, yeah, there are times that it's a struggle and you're like, what in the world am I doing? But to get through it, you come out a bigger, better person. And people that have been to Pullman and definitely that went to Washington State understand that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm from Seattle, and it's just night and day between Pullman and Seattle. You know, things are open all hours of all times of the day. You can go anywhere you want to in Seattle. And, you know, in Pullman, there's pretty much one of everything, one movie theater, one place to go. There's one main bar that everyone goes to. And it's just little things like that. It's such a small place, and it's the same reason that even all the football players get in trouble at the same the same place. And it's a beautiful place, you know, like you were mentioning, you know, people that graduated from there and were there for any period of time actually know the struggles and the differences between, you know, Pullman and wherever they're from, Spokane or Wenatchee, whatever it may be. So it was quite trying times for me. But, you know, if you go to school, you're there to study and to get things done. And if you can do that, if you can do it there, you can do it anywhere. So, yeah, I love Washington State, but Pullman was it was tough. I'll say that.
So what did you think of, what was your opinion of a school like University of Washington that's in the center of the city and, you know, 20 minutes, 10 minutes from everything?
Well, I love Washington State. And I'm not a Husky fan at all, but just from, any standpoint is, you know, would you rather go to school where it snows and it's uphill and you never know if you should dress for snow or 80 degree weather on any given day, then Pullman is your choice. But if you want to be, you know, on the water watching football in the middle of a big city in downtown Seattle, then no, UW is the obvious choice. And, you know, there's a lot of money and newness everywhere in Seattle. And it's just, it's especially for a recruiting standpoint, it'd be tough to get a kid to go to Washington State compared to, you know, what the University of Washington has to offer and where it has to offer it at.
Speaking of UW and Wazoo, we've got the Apple Cup of Basketball coming up this weekend, this time off Montlake in Seattle. Should be a fun little basketball game between the Cougars and the Huskies. Cougars had some decent wins early on. I think lately they've kind of been a little sluggish, whereas the Huskies had a nice win this past weekend over Colorado, and the young dogs are doing some good things.
Yeah, they are doing some good things. You know, new coaching staff, a lot of the same players, but I haven't really been following the Pac-12 basketball outside of Arizona or Arizona State, some of those top-tier teams. But hopefully UW and Wazoo can get some things together because their teams have been going downhill in recent years. But UW is doing good this year, so we'll see when some of the better teams, how they fare. But, you know, both teams not really in the top 25, not really relevant in real college basketball rankings. And, you know, it's going to be tough. But, you know, I'm glad they're both getting better, I guess. What about you? Have you been watching a whole lot of the Pac-12 Wazoo and UW basketball teams?
You know, I haven't taken a lot of time to do that, but I started to this past weekend. And like I mentioned, I noticed early on that Ernie Kent had some nice wins with the Cougars this season. And speaking of Ernie Kent at Wazoo, of course, he did great things in the past at Oregon, and the Cougars are hoping for the same thing. You know, and I can tell you firsthand from working with Ernie Kent with Pac-12 Networks before he took the job at Wazoo that you know, we all know he's a great basketball mind, and you know, from getting to work side by side with him on the broadcast, he seems to be a great guy. He's hilarious, fun to be around. But will that transition to good things on the court? And I know from watching him at Oregon and what he's done so far in Pullman that he is relentless and he expects a lot of his players. And you know, early this season, it led to some decent wins, and you know, hopefully they can get this ship, you know, heading in the right direction and be relevant in the conference. You know, you don't necessarily have to be in the top 25, but be relevant in the conference to where, you know, maybe you can upset an Oregon or an Arizona at some point. And, you know, typically UCLA is great at basketball, but just be relevant and have a shot, you know, put in the right.
I think that's why it's so difficult. You know, as somebody that I do try to watch Wazoo sports in general, tennis, rowing, even when they have it. But, you know, to watch the basketball team, I mean, they're 1-6 in the conference alone. And it's just not exciting to watch. You know, if you're not going to put decent product on the court, on the field, then what's the point, you know? And you know, no disrespect to UW, they have a whole lot to work with. They're 14-6, but they got a new coach, you know, working through that with younger guys, less talent than if they would have had Michael Porter Jr., although he's not really playing this year. But, you know, with losing Romar and with where they're at right now, they're doing really well. And I wish I could say the same for my school. Just for some reason, we don't even really put out NBA-caliber talent players. So we don't even have that to really ride. You know, we got Klay Thompson. That's about it. Aaron Baines. But, yeah, it would be nice, you know, to be even competitive against the Stanfords and USC's, Arizona's of our conference. But, you know, with where we're at right now, I can't really say that they're even worthy about talking about on the national scale or even, you know, making it to the tournament. Be lucky to make it to the Pac-12 tournament.
Well, of course, I guess I shouldn't say of course, because the Pac-12 tournament, do they take all 12 teams or just the top 10?
I think they do. I think they do the buys, like the 1-2 seed get a bye, okay, and then everyone else plays or something like that.
So, yes, then they would take all 12 for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I was saying this the other day that I wish there was a way back 7-10 years ago that Washington State could have found money to keep Tony Bennett, because he had that program in places it hadn't been in decades, if not forever.
Now he's doing it big for Virginia.
It was crazy back then how that all worked out, because his father, Dick Bennett, had the program first for a while and then basically passed the torch to the young prodigy. And unfortunately, bigger, better things, or the grass he thought was greener in Virginia. And I mean, he's done okay there, nice things, nothing spectacular, which, you know, hindsight's always 20/20, but geez, just getting to the dance for the Cougars is amazing. And that's, you know, the rainbow and the pot of gold. So, of course, financially, it was probably the right move for Tony Bennett back in the day. And Virginia has done nice things on the basketball court, but he had Wazoo maybe where he thought it was its peak, and it was maybe he thought he couldn't take it any further. I don't know. All right, let's go ahead and get to our first break here tonight on the Double. And when we come back, we will dive back into the NFL and get to a few coaching changes. There's a big name returning to the NFL in Oakland, and the Seahawks have made some assistant coaching changes that could be for the better. We'll find out here in 2018. We'll go ahead and take a break. Be right back on the Double with the Double S Express.
Yo, VIP. Guys, are you tired of being tired? Frustrated because it seems impossible to lose belly fat? If you're looking for a solution, then listen to Mark.
I had fantastic results with the Andro 400 Max. Probably lost 35 pounds. And more impressive than that was the inches I lost off of my belly and my waist. And the increased energy is fantastic. I'll be totally honest. I tried a different product and I wasn't happy with the different product. You guys are considerably cheaper than the other brand, and I can really feel the difference.
Andro 400 Max, the extra-strength, all-natural testosterone booster. The safe, easy, and affordable way to gain energy and lose stubborn belly fat. Satisfaction guaranteed or your money back. Feel and look like a new man. Go to andro400.com or call 888-400-0435. 888-400-0435.
I'm Chris Walls, and I'm a truck driver from Missouri. For 13 hours a night, I sit in my truck and I drive. Out of boredom, I'll stop and eat. If I'm not doing fast food, I guarantee there's a bag of chips open on my dashboard. Along with that, I'm good for about 4 liters of soda a night. That was all until Andro 400. I started out 4 months ago weighing 341 pounds, and since taking Andro 400, I have dropped 45 pounds. I'm sleeping better. There's no cravings. There's no excessive thirst. My knee pain went away. I've had some lower back issues, and I've noticed that that went away, and I can only contribute that to Andro 400. One thing that Andro 400 said on the radio ad says it attacks belly fat. Well, let me tell you, it did. I've lost 6 inches. This product really does work.
So guys, if you'd like to experience similar results, then get Andro 400. The safe, natural, and inexpensive way to boost your testosterone. Go to andro400.com. andro400.com.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express, Sean Wally and Sean Boyd.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally with guest host Corey Sullivan. Corey is down. We haven't even spoke about this, Corey. You are down in the land of sunshine, Hollywood, L.A. You're rubbing elbows and hobnobbing with some great people down there. And, of course, the ocean.
Oh, man, it is lovely here. When the place isn't on fire or sliding down a hill, it's a beautiful place to be. I think it's going to be 75 or 80, I think, tomorrow in the middle of winter. So, yeah, I can't complain too much, man. It's beautiful here in California.
So how long have you been down there, and was it much of a culture shock to go from Pullman to Los Angeles?
Yes. I don't want to say I hated Pullman, but, you know, like I said, I'm from the city, so it's just a different style. You know, you don't see tractors driving down the street in, you know, West Seattle. It's just not something that's an everyday thing. But in Pullman, farmland, not very, how do I put it? There's not a huge diversity at the school in Eastern Washington in general. And yeah, you know, moving out here, it's California. We got everything and everybody. So the weather is great. And aside from natural disasters, it's a great place to be. You know, outside from Seattle, it's second best place on earth. Just, you know, it's where Disneyland is.
How many times have you been to see Mickey?
I believe I've been to Disneyland 3 times, and I've been to Disney World 1 time. So I've got to see a couple things, but I haven't gone to, you know, the Harry Potter exhibit. So definitely got to check that out. Harry's my guy.
Okay, so was that 3 times in your life or 3 times since you relocated?
3 times in my life. I haven't been not one time now that I live out here in California. And the thing is, I think I get in for free too. So I really don't have an excuse why I haven't gone.
Well, Corey, you know, one thing I can say is probably better in Pullman, the traffic.
There's no such thing as traffic in Pullman. I think there's maybe one light where traffic sits out in Pullman. But aside from not speeding in the Colfax area, I think it's pretty nice. But you do get to go faster out here in California. I think the speed limit most places is 70 to 65. So, and I think they're pretty lenient. There's real crimes out here in California, so they're not too much of a sticklers for the speed, but, you know, things happen.
Man, if we're not careful, we might make the one-page newspaper in Colfax, because Colfax just got mentioned on a radio show.
That's exactly my point. You know, it's Colfax, it's no Everett or any of the big other decent-sized cities by the big cities. So it's night and day, western Washington and eastern Washington. So, yeah, it's just, you know, more adding more to the fire.
Well, Corey, back to the world of sports. There have been some changes, definitely, in Renton at the VMAC Seahawks headquarters. Coach Pete Carroll, I'm assuming with John Schneider possibly having some input, maybe not, because he's the GM in charge of the players on the field. Mm-hmm. But, man, offensive coordinator in Seattle, Daryl Bevel, gone. Offensive line coach, fine. Assistant head coach, Tom Cable, gone. And now, obviously, defensive coordinator Chris Richard, gone. And just today breaking, defensive line coach from previous seasons is gone as well. Pete Carroll shaking things up in Seattle.
Yeah. Ken Norton, I'm not surprised that he's back. That was Pete's boy back during the USC days, so I'm not too mad about it. And, you know, he's been good with the linebackers, although Oakland's defense hasn't been the greatest. The production that he's got out of Khalil Mack and Bruce Irvin has been superb. And if he can replicate that with KJ and Bobby, I think even maybe another young guy that we draft, it'll be great. So I'm glad that he's back. Bobby Wagner was happy about it. And at the end of the day, that's really all that's important, because he likes his coach. He's the one playing on the field. So. More power to him. And Schottenheimer on offense, I don't know, is a whatever signing to me. Hopefully he can do something. I wasn't too impressed with what he did with either Luck or Brissett when he was with the Colts. I know Luck was coming off an injury, but he was just, you know, he had a good year for being a good quarterback. And then Brissett, he threw for under 60% completions, and it was just, it wasn't good. You know, neither of those seasons were winning seasons, and we'll see. He's one of those legacy guys, which I'm always never a huge fan of. I always like to see different guys get shots, but, you know, he's who I have to work with for this year. So, you know, hopefully I'll give him the benefit of the doubt for now. And, you know, working with guys like Russell Wilson, hopefully he can get the running game started and see some improvements from Bevel. Otherwise, you know, he's going to be having the last laugh while we continue to struggle. But what do you think of these the two guys that we do have signed?
Well, I think it's interesting to have Pete double back to Ken Norton Jr. When he was here, he was the linebackers coach, and he had some of the best linebackers in the game to work with, and he still will in Bobby Wagner, KJ Wright. But clearly, there was something missing in the Chris Richard era as defensive coordinator. And really, I think it was that attitude and that swagger and having teams fear our defense again. Now, granted, Ken Norton wasn't in charge of the entire defense when he was here previously, but he was a linebacker. He was a real grown man who did amazing linebacker man-eating things on the field. And his dad was a boxer. So, I mean, he's got, you know, all kinds of testosterone flowing that, for whatever reason, didn't work in Oakland. Let's be real about that. You know, Sean Boyd, who's been on this show for years as my co-host, big Raider fan, and he said, "You guys can have Ken Norton. That's fine." Well, that's his thought, but also, and he agrees with me on this, that those, you know, the big guys at the NFL Network and ESPN, like Adam Schefter and whatnot, they have said that Ken Norton and Jack Del Rio did not see eye to eye. And Jack Del Rio's was the coach in Oakland, the head coach. So if you're butting heads with the man in charge, that's already a recipe for disaster.
Yeah.
So now Ken Norton and Pete Carroll have already been together, and clearly their philosophies are similar, or Pete wouldn't entertain bringing him back. And there are those that have said that were close to things in Renton with the Seahawks that Chris Richard and Tom Cable didn't always fall 100% in line with Pete's vision and what Pete wants to do. And Pete, being a defensive backs coach back in the day, and he's a defensive-minded guy, he wants somebody that's right behind him, walking step for step. Mm-hmm. And hopefully Norton's the guy to do that.
Yeah, I mean, he was for a while, so hopefully, you know, that's what Pete feels like he needs, you know, to bring Norton back and have that same success that they had together at USC and, you know, also in the beginning with the Seahawks. So I'm glad that he's back, and if the linebackers are happy, that's, you know, like I said, at the end of the day, there's nothing more important than that. It's not fantasy sports, so it's real life. And if they got along with him the first time and he created Bobby Wagner to who he is today, I'm all for that.
All right. As I mentioned, Sean Boyd, his ties with the Oakland Raiders, we have to mention, number one, Tom Cable is back with the Raiders as their offensive line coach, taking the same capacity he had here in Seattle. But the huge news in the NFL for the coaching offseason, John Gruden returns to Oakland for an unprecedented $100 million 10-year contract.
That was an amazing deal for anybody. That's a basketball deal in the NFL. And I can see it. I think Gruden is leaps and bounds recruiting-wise. You watched anything leading up to the NFL draft the last couple of years, and every quarterback, every major player went in front of Gruden. And his mind in the NFL is great. You know, he's great. Listen to commentary and play-by-play and all the above. He's, you know, he's worth every dollar. And, you know, it's a team that's going to be in Vegas. They're going to be good. And I'm excited to see what he can do now that Chucky's back.
It's going to be very interesting to see. Can he get them back to prominence before he was traded to Tampa Bay, like the level they had back then when they were in the Super Bowl or close to it? Of course, the infamous Tuck Rule with Tom Brady and the Snow Bowl back in the day, in the early 2000s, but the Raiders were never the same after that until last season in 2016. They were 12-4, but they fell back to 6-10 this season. And yeah, wow, you know, will things be the same? Probably not, because times are not the same. There's different rules in the game, but, you know, Gruden's been away from the field for a very long time. He's done great with Monday Night Football. We all like listening to him and, of course, seeing his different facial expressions. And speaking of Monday Night Football, it's going to be interesting. At the Pro Bowl, Seattle's favorite Matt Hasselbeck getting a shot to be an analyst for the Pro Bowl game, which some are saying is an audition for Monday Night Football in 2018.
I think I like Matt Hasselbeck, don't get me wrong, but I would like to see more defensive-minded guys in the booth. I always see Aikman and, you know, there's Bradshaw and Dilfer. You go up and down the list of quarterbacks. It would be nice to see, you know, a safety or, you know, get Ed Reed or Ray Lewis or somebody like that in there. But, yeah, I mean, seeing Matt Hasselbeck is cool. He's a Seattle guy. So I'm not mad about that, but it would be nice to see some other guys in there too.
All right, Corey, well, appreciate you filling in here tonight and jumping back on here on the double. And you got anything coming up in the near couple weeks that you want to let everybody know about?
Oh, man, just it was good to hear from you. I'm glad, you know, we got a little chat session in, and hopefully we can do it again soon.
Corey Sullivan, thanks for your insight and your time tonight. And, of course, man, I'm surprised you haven't said it yet. How about a go Cougs, Corey?
Go Cougs. See you later, Sean.
Corey Sullivan down in La La Land, Los Angeles. Corey's, man, he's going to be doing big things. You know, he was awesome at Wazoo and working with me for Pac-12 networks at various events on the Palouse at Washington State University. So Look for Corey to do big things here in the near future. I know that he made the move to Los Angeles because his current female friend, his girlfriend, is a reporter down in Southern California. So they're there for that. And he's trying to find his way in Los Angeles, like a lot of people that head to Los Angeles, like one Frenchie, who is the host and MC for the Los Angeles Clippers at Staples Center, doing great things. And if you're going to watch the NBA All-Star Game coming up here in a few weeks, you very well may see Frenchie on television, probably Saturday night. He will be hosting and involved in the three-point shootout, the dunk contest, and what else do they do nowadays? The futures game with a bunch of youngsters and all that fun stuff in the NBA All-Star Weekend. So big thanks to Corey for jumping on tonight, his second show here with me on the double. Of course, we're not too far away from February. Holy cow, you know what that means. Pitchers and catchers will be reporting to not only spring training in Arizona, but also the Grapefruit League in Florida. Hard to believe. Baseball is not too far away, which in the Pacific Northwest is a good thing, only because there is no NBA basketball. There is no NHL hockey. So we will see if interest can peak for the Seattle Mariners. They made a few moves over the offseason, not nearly as many as in years past. Of course, D. Gordon, one of the bigger moves, will be moving from second base to center field, the trade with the Marlins. And he's an amazing athlete, great speed, always leads the league in stolen bases and near the league leaders in hits. So you put him combined with one Gene Segura at the top of the order, and you would think the table should be set for the bulk of the Mariners 3-4-5 hitters, Robinson Cano and Kyle Seager and Nelson Cruz, and the beat goes on. But can the Mariners stay healthy to even be competitive in 2018? We will find out as the weeks and months roll on. Super Bowl 52 is set. Do you like it? Do you hate it? Are you indifferent? Will you watch for the commercials only? Do you want Tom Brady to get his sixth title? Is he the greatest of all time? Many think he is. They use the great acronym GOAT, which, if you did not know, stands for greatest of all time. We're here to educate. We're here to help. Man, it's so funny and ironic that when everybody talks about in the last few weeks that there's dissension with the Patriots and Belichick might leave and Brady and Belichick don't get along anymore or ever. Come on. Look at all the games they've won, all the championships they've won. I'm sure they can at least be simpatico. There's no way they're bickering and arguing and hating each other for 15 years. This would not have worked as well as it has for the New England Patriots and all of their fans. What is that like? Are you a Patriot fan out there? What in the world is that like? To go to 8 Super Bowls in 16 years. I don't believe there's any other team that's done that. So any other fan base or any other players that know? I mean, for the Vikings in the NFC Championship game yesterday, they had a cornerback who was 39 years old playing in his first NFC Championship game. So he'd never seen the light of day in a conference title game, let alone a Super Bowl. Just proves how hard it is to get there, yet the Patriots can seemingly do it every other year. Although this makes 2 in a row, as they won it last year, couldn't Falcons couldn't hold on to a 28-3 lead. Just incredible. We will be joined shortly by Seattle Times Sports business reporter Jeff Baker. Just waiting to connect with Jeff and talk all things Seattle sports. What's going on with Key Arena? When will it start to be demolished and rebuilt, refurbished? What does that mean for hockey? What does that mean for the NBA? Folks, it's been 10 years this summer. 10 years that the NBA was allowed to leave thanks to the guy that should be the most hated man in Seattle, Greg Nickels, former mayor. You know, don't hate Howard Schultz nearly as much. You should hate Greg Nickels way more, because Schultz gave in a contract, you need to put in a good faith effort for at least 1 year. They did the 1 year. Did they do the good faith? No. Clearly, all the emails we saw back in the day between Clay Bennett and his other owners of the Sonics, now Thunder, proved that they did not have any skin in the game to stay in Seattle at all. Yet here we are, almost 10 years later, the 12th largest market in the country. No NBA team. No NHL team, no winter sport outside of college basketball and other college sports. Crazy. Did anybody think 10 years later there would be no NBA team back in Seattle? Hard to believe, hard to imagine, yet it is the reality. Great to see guys that are from here that have made things happen in the NBA, doing good things in the community and coming back and bringing pro-ams and other exhibition games, like a Jamal Crawford, like a Nate Robinson. You know, guys that are from this area love it and don't forget. And we talked earlier that good things are happening at the University of Washington without Lorenzo Romar, who's now an assistant in Arizona with the Wildcats. Now you look at the Huskies' new head coach, and they have a very young team. A lot of freshmen, and they're balling. They beat Colorado on Saturday. They've got Washington State coming to Alaska Airlines Arena this Sunday, and you would think they would beat the Cougars, but you never know. That's why they play the game. You wouldn't have thought initially that the Huskies would be a decent team in the first year with their new head coach. Once Lorenzo Romar left and all of the committed high-profile recruits like Michael Porter Jr. and the rest of the former Nathan Hale High School guys uncommitted and left. But that's the reality, and UW chose to go that route. So far, hey, they get an A grade. It's worked out. They're in the top half of the Pac-12 standings right now, and they beat Washington State on Sunday. That just puts them another game above 500 and closer to relevance. All you have to do is make waves in the Pac-12 tournament and see what happens. Of course, Pac-12 tournament in Las Vegas, as always. Go ahead and step away for a minute and see if we can connect with Jeff Baker of the Seattle Times after this here on The Double with the Double S Express. We'll be right back.
likes the inconvenience of car repairs. Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services, Platinum service without the platinum price.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express, Sean Wally and Sean Boyd.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally here with you, and let's go out to the holysmokenuts.com phone lines and welcome in Jeff Baker, the sports enterprise and investigative business reporter for sports at the Seattle Times. Jeff, thanks for your time tonight.
Great to be back on.
Jeff, of course, the big news at Seattle Center is the new mayor has gone full force, Jenny Durkin, with moving forward with a refurbish renovation of Key Arena. What does that mean? When will things start to happen at Key Arena? And let's start there, and then we'll move on to what that means for future teams.
Well, they're happening there right now. I mean, they're in the middle of an environmental impact assessment that's being done on the arena. They're hoping that'll be done by this fall, by about October at the latest. And once that is signed off on, they can go ahead and start construction, start the new $600 million renovation. And when that takes place, they hope that it'll be done within 2 years at most, and that they'll be able to open up in time for the 2021 NHL season, which would be October of 2020. You know, they hope that it's done prior to that. But that's the general timeline right now, and so that's what we're looking at. So barring any kind of real, you know, problem that comes up or some kind of legal challenge, it looks like they'll be on that timeline.
Everybody get up. Back here on the Double with the Double S Express with Jeff Baker of the Seattle Times. And Jeff, you were talking about what is happening or going to happen at Key Arena, an environmental impact being done to and hopefully move forward starting October and beyond.
That's right. You know, once that impact study is done, they'll be able to get going. It takes about 2 years to build the arena at most, and so they're looking at, you know, hopefully having everything done by October of 2020 to bring an NHL team here. And honestly, barring any kind of major disaster that happens during that study or any kind of legal challenge that pops up, they should be able to make that time frame, because the city's working with them. Don't forget, the city's a partner with the Oakview Group right now. So it's in the city's best interest to make sure that this thing gets expedited.
Now, Jeff, what does that mean? You mentioned the NHL. They've been interested in Seattle for a while, and we're looking to them when they decided to expand to Las Vegas recently. Obviously, until Key Arena is complete with the refurbishment, there's really nowhere with an NHL size ice rink for them to play in this region. So I'm guessing that they couldn't start here until Key Arena is ready?
Yeah, that's about the NHL and even the expansion strategy. I noticed that Chinaplick is going to let them launch a season ticket drive, and I've heard suggestions that, you know, if Seattle gets enough season ticket holders to sign up, then the NHL will give them a franchise. That's not at all what's happening here. the season ticket thing is a bit of a ruse. There's no team in the history of the NHL that's ever flunked a season ticket drive. The NHL knows they're going to get enough season ticket holders here. They're not worried about that. What they're worried about is making sure there's no snags, no major holdups in this environmental review. So, you know, they'll go ahead, they'll launch this season ticket drive, you know, in another month or so, you know, maybe within a matter of weeks. They'll launch it, and then they'll get X amount of people signing up, putting down their deposits for it. They'll show it to the league. The league will think about it over the summer. And then by the end of the summer, they'll know if this environmental review is going to be done in time. And when it's done, when they have the inclination, the indication that it's done and that they're going to get an arena built in 2 years and that they'll open for the 2021 season, at that point, once they get the all clear, they'll give the franchise to Seattle. It really doesn't have anything to do with season ticket numbers. They wouldn't have come this far if they weren't sure they were going to make those numbers. That's a slam dunk. What they're really worried about is the environmental review getting done on time and that there are no lawsuits, no major complications that could delay it.
Now, Jeff, you wrote a piece recently in the Times that got into how the WHL teams may or may not be affected with an NHL team coming to town in the coming years. What are the Silvertips and Thunderbirds thinking? Is it a good thing to have more hockey, or will that take fans away from them?
Well, they both say it's a good thing for hockey, and you know that it'll create increased exposure to the sport for the people who aren't necessarily exposed to it as of yet. You know, they both work in regions that are outside the city proper. You know, of course, the Silvertips go all the way up to near the Canadian border in Bellingham as far as their fan base goes. And really, the Thunderbirds go all the way south almost to the border with Oregon with their season ticket base. And you know, a lot of those people won't be able to afford necessarily to go to NHL games on a regular basis. And for a lot of them, you know, buying season tickets to these junior games is good. It's good for their families because they can take everybody there as opposed to just one person going for the price of an NHL ticket. And so they're really optimistic that it's not going to hurt their business all that much. But, I mean, if you look at the history, you know, in Canada of junior, major junior teams, not junior B, but we're talking about major junior teams. Their players, very different than the rest of junior that we have here in the United States and in Canada. But major junior hockey, working side by side with NHL teams in various markets, it's a really mixed bag of results. I mean, you have the Alberta teams doing really well in, you know, Edmonton and Calgary, but they're also part owned by those NHL teams. So there's a difference there. They play in huge arenas. You know, it's not the same. I grew up in Montreal, and I could tell you, you know, right outside of Montreal, I grew up at Laval, which had a junior team here, and then they lost it. So they could never the way that they wanted to. Mario Lemieux used to play there. I used to go see him play in junior. They could never draw. Then Montreal itself had a junior team for years, junior Canadiens. It folded. A few years ago, they had another junior team that came back. It folded. They're going to try to go back to that city again, but it's tough. It's tough in some of these cities to get the hockey fans to go see junior hockey and take it seriously when you've got a National Hockey League team in the same city. And Toronto itself, in Toronto as well, it's a real mixed bag. You know, the Mississauga Ice Dogs, not very successful. You know, as a franchise there, Mississauga is right next door to downtown proper. You know, they've had other teams try to make it go out in Mississauga. They have some in Barrie that have done well for years, but Barrie's a lot further north. It just depends on where you're located. So, you know, is it a guarantee that the teams, junior teams here will survive? No, it's not a guarantee. They're both playing about the best hockey you can possibly play over the last few years. Silvertips in first place right now, just as they were last year. You know, a really good regular season team the last few years. You've got the Thunderbirds playing well as well, the defending WHL champions, WHL finalists the year before. You're not going to get much better than that for two teams over a three-season span, and yet they're both still, you know, still struggling to maximize their respective markets. You know, the Thunderbirds have said as much. They still have people living south of Seattle who have no idea there's even a junior hockey team in camp right now where they play at the Schoeller Center. And then you look at where the Silvertips are right now. They're averaging, you know, they haven't averaged 5,000 fans or more for a few seasons now, quite a few seasons. And they used to get 7,000 fans back a decade or so ago. So, you know, there's room there for improvement as well. And they're both on highs as franchises. So, you know, they got their work cut out for them because they are going to lose a chunk. You know, they're not going to lose just two or three fans if NHL comes here, they'll lose a fairly significant chunk, I think, of fans. And by significant, I mean 5% would be significant in any business that size. They're going to see people go gravitate towards the NHL, buy tickets there instead of here, and they're going to have to make up for that. You know, and they've got about 2 or 3 years right now to try to build their fan base up, you know, to prepare for the inevitable loss that they might have. But, you know, depending how popular hockey becomes, and it might not happen overnight, it might take a few seasons, you know, there might be people that gravitate towards the junior game because of that. It just depends. Like I said, even in diehard Canadian cities, like the ones I've lived and worked in, it's not a given that just because people love hockey in a specific market that they're automatically going to go buy tickets to see major junior hockey. There's a difference between that and the pros. So we'll see. There's no easy answer.
Jeff, since professional NHL hockey or just professional hockey in general hasn't been in Seattle since the Metropolitans way back in the day, do you have any idea, you know, with all your hockey knowledge and all the coverage you've done in Canada and throughout in the game of hockey, what kind of impact hockey will have at Lower Queen Anne, at Key Arena? There's no given that fans will just automatically show up.
Well, I used to go to some of those Thunderbirds games way back when. Not Thunderbirds, Metropolitans games. I used to go, and I used to sit and watch them. And we were all that. No, I'm just kidding. I wasn't that old. In all seriousness, I got to say, I think they'll do okay here. I think they'll do well because I think the arena itself is going to be a major attraction for the first few years. I think it's going to be a sporting venue unlike any we've seen yet to this date in Seattle. And, you know, saying that, I'm extremely impressed by Safeco Field. It's always been even when I was a visiting writer coming in from Toronto, Safeco Field was always my favorite ballpark in the majors. It's so state-of-the-art that, you know, 20 years later, it still looks like a state-of-the-art ballpark. They've done a great job with it. But I think this new arena is going to surpass that. From everything I've heard and some of the things I've seen, I think it's going to really be a showpiece for Seattle, and I think people are going to want to go to that arena just to see the inside of the arena for a while, regardless of how the hockey team does. And that said, I think hockey's a very exciting sport that a lot of American fans don't really have a long-term exposure to. They haven't grown up with it necessarily unless you were from the Northeast. You know, the vast majority haven't seen a game live. Games are very different live than they are on television when you're watching hockey. It's a lot of fun. And I think it's the kind of sport, it's a very expensive sport to go see, but I think we have the money here in Seattle, especially the money living all around where Key Arena is going to be because of Amazon and all the other employers that have moved in and really taken up stakes there in the last few years. I think you're going to get a lot of millennials, a lot of younger people with disposable income that are going to be attracted to the game and that are going to want to go see it. It's going to be the hot ticket in town, I can tell you, for the first few years because of the promotional people that are going to be behind it. And if the team starts off anywhere near as well as the Vegas Golden Knights have, I think, you know, you could have a real hit team in this town. And let's face it, there's a void here for winter sports. We're a city that's hungry for winter sports again. And I think that's going to fill the void nicely.
Now, Jeff, in terms of the NHL and a team, there are already people with deep pockets in line to be owners should a team be awarded, correct?
Yes, that's correct. Jerry Bruckheimer, the Hollywood producer, and a guy, David Bonderman, who's a lot wealthier than Bruckheimer. Bonderman's an investment banker. He's worth $3 billion plus. They're both partnering on the NHL venture for now, so that's the money that's going to be behind it. You know, and we're not talking about local investors yet either. I'm sure they're going to bring some local investors in as well, but for now, that's the hockey group.
Now, getting back to Key Arena and the impact on the city, OVG changed their stance and they're paying for 100%. Is that correct?
No, they haven't changed their stance at all. They've always been paying for 100% of the construction. That was always it. What was that issue? They initially were going to build a parking garage above ground that's separate from the renovation. And they ended up changing that. They were going to seek public dollars from the Port of Seattle for that. But then there was a bit of an outcry over that. People worried about the aesthetics of it. People worried about the public money involved. So they scrapped that garage. And so they're not building it. They're going to keep part of an underground garage and they're going to do stuff elsewhere, but they're not building an above-ground parking garage next to the facility. But they were always going to spend 100% of the money on the construction phase of it. The same as Chris Hansen's group down in Soto has pledged to pay 100% of the construction costs of it. We're not talking about back-end tax breaks and all kinds of stuff that both groups would be looking for. But the Oakview group has not changed its policy on that.
And as you mentioned, Chris Hansen and his group, the Nordstroms, and of course the face everybody knows, Russell Wilson, are they just flapping in the wind and they're pretty much the sun is setting on any chance of anything happening with them?
Well, in all honesty, the ball's in their court, and it always has been, or the puck's in their net, I guess, or in their end of the rink, at least right now. I mean, if they want to become relevant again in the discussion, they're going to have to do something that changes the game, that moves the needle a little bit, and they've yet to do that. And the one thing, even Jenny Durkin hinted at that the other day, the new mayor of Seattle, she said, you know, we're not closing the book on them just yet. You know, there's still room for them to get back in this if they want to compete for an NBA arena. But, I mean, competing for it with a group that's already building an arena, that already has ownership lined up, that's already going to get an NHL team and most possibly will get an NBA team once the NBA is ready to expand. If they want to get in that discussion, they're going to have to, you would think, and this is just me talking, I'm not speaking for the city, but they're going to have to change the dynamic. They're going to have to introduce a way that they can get this arena built before a team is actually awarded. You know, right now, that's what the Oakview Group's doing. They're building the arena regardless of whether or not they get a team. And we've already seen they're now going to get an NHL team. But the NBA is not a certainty, and that's what you really need to drive the thing economically. With Hansen's group, they're saying, give us a team and we'll build the arena. But that's a strategy that hasn't worked for 5 years. It's failed. And not only that, but, you know, they had an opportunity to go and get the National Hockey League about 3 years ago when they launched an expansion process. And, you know, they couldn't come to any kind of a deal with prospective owners, and they still haven't been able to come to any deal with prospective owners, and they say they're not interested in the NHL. Well, it's kind of like, you know, that's great that you've got all this land and you want to build an arena on it, but none of your plans to this date have worked. And you've got nobody in the NBA standing up and saying, hey, we really want to partner with Chris Hansen. We're going to give him a break and say, hey, we'll give you a team or anything like that. Nobody stood up and said that. Even before the vote they had on the street vacation 2 years ago, nobody from the NBA stood up and said that. In fact, Adam Silver, the commissioner of the NBA, stood up and told me 12 days before the vote that, you know, even if they vote to give Chris Hansen a street vacation to build his arena, that the NBA is still not going to expand. I mean, that's not something anybody in the city council wanted to hear 12 days before the vote, and I believe it cost Hansen some votes. So, you know, they have to change the dynamic. It's up to them. If they bring in a big-time whale, a new money guy who's going to help them build the arena before getting a team, I think that changed the game. I think that's a real game changer. I think even getting a guy like a billionaire to replace what they lost in Steve Ballmer would signal a bit of a game changer. That would definitely, I'll tell you, I'd write about that. I mean, that would be something that could change the discussion in the city. Right now, I think that they're good leverage for the city to use to make sure they get what they want out of the OP group, and it's good leverage. You know, if the NBA starts to, you know, if the OP group is maybe too favorable to the NBA, I mean, it's something you could look at if you're the city and maybe take a second look at Chris Hansen's group. But right now, there's no real pressing reason to do that because you have one group that's ready to go and build and use public private dollars to do it, and you've got another group that says they'll use private dollars, but they don't have the means to show how they're going to get those private dollars, and they don't have any intention to build their arena until they get a team, and there's no league that's ready to offer them a team until they build an arena. So it's kind of a non-starter. I guess that's the way I would put it. So are they dead in the water? If they keep going with this strategy, I firmly believe that they are dead in the water. If they change their strategy, you know, they could possibly pick up and maybe mount a challenge to the Oakview group. And as Jenny Durkin said, nothing's set in stone. But it's really in Chris Hansen's court. They can't keep doing business as usual and banging their head against the same wall and expecting a different result. They're going to have to, you know, change the dynamic a little bit.
Jeff Baker of the Seattle Times joining us. Jeff, hard to fathom it's been 10 years this summer here in 2018 that the Seattle Supersonics were allowed to leave thanks to Greg Nichols and whoever else people want to blame. And you've mentioned, and the NBA has mentioned, that they're not expanding anytime soon. So, number one, why is that? I realize that's one more piece of the pie that goes to another owner or owners in Seattle. But at the same time, you look at their TV contracts. These are billion-dollar contracts. And you would think they would want the 12th market in the country back. And if they say it's not happening anytime soon, are we talking 5 more years, 7 more years? Do we have a clue?
Yeah, I mean, I keep hearing 5 more years. That's what I've heard. I've heard it would be about 2 years after hockey comes to Seattle. So hockey's not coming to Seattle for 3 more years, you know, as of last October anyway. So it's almost 3 years. And then, you know, I hear 2 years after that's when the NBA would come, unless you have a team that's going to relocate. And, you know, I keep hearing the Memphis franchise is the most likely to relocate if there's going to be a relocation. But if that doesn't happen, I'm told it's about 5 years from now that you'll see a team. So, yeah, and honestly, I know the people in Seattle don't like to hear this all the time, but that's really, in the we're talking pro sports, that's really not long relative to what other cities have to wait. You look at how long Los Angeles waited to get a football team back. You look at my hometown, Montreal, they lost the Expos in 2004, so that was 14 years ago, and they're not getting a team back there anytime soon. So they're probably going to go about 18 years, 20 years minimum before they would get a team back to Montreal. You know, we can go on and on with a bunch of franchises that move and then don't come back. You can look at Washington, D.C., losing baseball, and then what is it, 40 years later, they get the Expos back to play over there as the Nationals. I mean, it's in the grand scheme of things, Seattleites, you know, I know they miss the Sonics. I know it hurts. I know, you know, this city living here now for over a decade, you know, it really, I miss having winter sports here. But in relative terms, the people in Seattle haven't waited that long since the Sonics left. So, I mean, you know, it's good to see the impatience that's there because it means there's still an interest in the team. But, you know, as far as thinking our city's been singled out for any kind of torture in this regard, no. I mean, we're suffering probably a little less than a lot of other cities have suffered up to this point. You know, Cleveland got its football team back relatively quickly. Baltimore had to wait from 1983 to I think it was 1997 to get a football team back. So that's 14 years. So, you know, we're not there yet. And the thing to remember here is, you know, we're not talking about right and wrong. We're not talking about what's fair. We're talking about professional sports. And, you know, what the fans have to understand sometimes, and they know this. They know this in their head, but in their heart they sometimes forget. Professional sports is not about right and wrong. It's about greed. It's about making money. And, you know, the NBA will do whatever is right for its pocketbook. They care to a degree that, yeah, they probably stiffed Seattle a bit with what they did, but in the end they'll come back here when it's ready for them, when the money's good for them. You talk about billion-dollar TV contracts, the reality is there's a lot of owners in the NBA that don't want to split that contract up. You know, they got a lot of billions pouring in for the next several years, and they don't want, you know, 2 more teams cutting into that pie. They'd rather see the contract expire, know what's going to come next. I mean, I was telling people this for years, that you're going to have to wait until this TV contract gets signed, and then you're probably going to have to wait a while after that, at least a year, I was telling people, but more likely, you know, maybe even 2, to see how this contract works. And see, you know, how teams are adjusting within it. And some teams aren't adjusting all that well within it. Yeah, there's still NBA teams out trying to make money. They haven't taken care of all their problems. And the owners look at that, and they're saying, yeah, you know, it'll be nice to expand someday. But Seattle's never been a priority, and it's not a priority. So all that stuff that we kept hearing when they were trying to build the Soto Arena about how NBA expansion was right around the corner, how it was coming, I mean, it just the best I can say to you is it just wasn't true. There was not a kernel of truth to that. And it's unfortunate that, you know, some people propagated that myth that, you know, we need to build this arena because we're going to get expansion any day now. Well, here we are. It's years later. Where's the expansion? It hasn't happened. And so people have to take a hard look at that and ask, you know, who were the people that were spreading those rumors? Were they doing it because they had skin in the game, because they stood to benefit financially from it? I don't know. I don't know where the rumors started, but they weren't true. And it's too bad because I think a lot of Seattle sports fans got badly misled by people into thinking we were going to have expansion here any day now. And it's never been the case. And, you know, Adam Silver has told me for years that it's not the case. And here we are years later, and guess what? It's not the case. I feel for the basketball fans here. I really do. But, you know, they were given bad information years ago about the possibility of NBA expansion, and it remains bad information. And, you know, so they feel as if they've been tortured a little more than the average fan in other cities where teams have relocated. And it probably seems like it's gone on for 30 years here, but in relative terms, it's less than 10 years really isn't, or 10 years since you had a team here. It's really not that long a wait. It usually takes a lot longer than 10 years. I know that was a long-winded answer, but it's a complicated question. It's not. The storyline about this has been too simplified in Seattle by people. It's been too, it's way more complicated than it's been presented to sports fans. And, you know, it's about time they heard the truth.
Jeff, is there any chance that all this money being poured into Key Arena to refurbish Key Arena and the surrounding Seattle Center area, that Key Arena will end up or could end up like Kansas City's Sprint Center with no real tenant?
Well, no. I mean, unless the NHL makes history and decides not to award an expansion franchise after they've basically allowed a season ticket drive here. I mean, it would be the first failed season ticket drive in the history of NHL expansion. So, no, there's no chance. We're going to have an NHL team here. You know, within the next few months, we'll probably hear an announcement, or I'd say within the next 6 months, we'll hear some kind of announcement about that. So, and you notice that, I mean, there's no coincidence that the day after Jenny Durkin signed off on the Key Arena deal, the NHL came out and made the announcement it did. It's not a coincidence. There's no such thing as coincidences like that. The NHL had nothing about Seattle on its Board of Governors meeting schedule, and they made a point to make that the news of the day, that we're giving Seattle this opportunity, because they know how long the people here have heard stuff about the Sprint Center, and they know that there's certain corners that have been sowing, you know, some of the concerns legitimate. I don't want to minimize it all, but some of it was a deliberate effort by certain parties to try to undermine the Key Arena effort by mentioning Sprint Center, by mentioning these other incidents in the past of Tim Leiwicki, who's had, you know, numerous successes beyond that. And I can tell you myriad differences between Kansas City and Seattle. But there were people that were trying to sow discord that way, some of them on the public airwaves, unfortunately. And, you know, so the NHL wanted to put that to rest right away, because behind the scenes, the people that knew what was going on, they know that, and I'm talking about the city, the National Hockey League, they knew that that was nonsense. And so they proved it. They came out and they went as far as they could go in awarding a franchise to Seattle from the NHL without actually doing it. This is about as close as you can get without actually doing it. They can't do it because, as I explained about the environmental review, they have to make sure that's going to pass. And once it does, they'll award the franchise. So, no, zero chance that this will be the Sprint Center. Zero chance. I mean, unless, you know, who knows? If the world's economy collapses tomorrow, you know, anything's fair game. But if things keep going normally the way they are now, there's no chance that this becomes a Sprint Center.
Jeff Baker of the Seattle Times. Jeff, before we let you go, anything upcoming you're working on that you want to let everybody know about, to look forward to at seattletimes.com and in the paper?
Yeah, I'd love to tell you, but unfortunately then I'd have to kill you. No, I'm just kidding. I would never do that, Sean. But, there's a couple of bigger projects I'm working on. One of them involves... I'd like to tease it a little bit. I just can't. There's a couple of things coming down the pipe that are pretty good. I'm actually going to be going to El Salvador as well in a few weeks. The Seattle Sounders are going to be playing a Champions League game down there, and I'm going to go down a little early and do a bunch of features from down in El Salvador. I think that's going to be fascinating. I've never been down there, and I have to be able to do that. And the papers graciously said, yeah, that's a great idea. Let's do that. And so I'll be heading to one of the most dangerous cities in the world, San Salvador. And so that should be a hoot. And if I don't make it back, this will be like one of the last interviews I ever do on the airwaves in Seattle. So you're a lucky guy. But, we've got a few good things coming down, a few major projects I've been working on for a while. And a couple of them are coming up right now. So within the next week or two. That's the most I could say. I'm sorry. I wish I could say more.
I'll take the super top secret text information that, of course, you know, the inside information from Jeff Baker. And be sure that hopefully Twitter will work as you head down to El Salvador. Follow Jeff on Twitter at Jeff with a G, Jeff Baker Times, for all the insight on the Seattle Sounders, whether or not hockey will be here. You've had an article recently on the upcoming Olympics and that they've had restrictions on social media, which is not necessarily a bad thing.
No, I can't get a lot. You know, I can't last a single day without reading what the brilliant insights on Twitter have to say about my work. I just can't. I can't go 24 hours without reading. So, yeah, I'll definitely have to make sure Twitter's working down in El Salvador, because honestly, I could not go 5 minutes without the helpful suggestions that I get on a daily basis off of Twitter. I'm sure you feel the same way when you engage in it.
So many people hiding behind their phones and a keyboard. But hey, it's the world we live in. Jeff Baker, Seattle Times, thank you so much for your time, your insight, and please be safe in El Salvador. And it was great getting to chat with you and hang out at the WHL game in Everett a week and a half ago. And I'm sure you had a good time getting back to hockey.
I did. I had a really good time. I'd like to get out to more of those games, you know. And, you know, I've let our paper know we should be doing we should be following some of these teams, because I think there's going to be a nice on-ice collision again between the Silvertips and Everett, and they'll probably end up playing the Thunderbirds again. It just seems like it's got to go that way. It's like the Canadians and the Bruins in the NHL. There's just got to be some kind of playoff clash between those sides, and I think the Everett side looks pretty stacked this year from what I've been seeing. I like the new moves that they made a couple of weeks back, and I don't think they've lost a game since, and so you know, they definitely look a lot more balanced going into the stretch run here than they did the last couple of years, I think.
Yeah, they've also had health on their side with the Silvertips, and that's always a good recipe for success in sports.
Yeah, you can't, you ask the Mariners how much that matters. Health does matter, you know, but you stack it the best you can, and you cross your fingers, you hope for the best, and they do have health on their side, a little more so than the Thunderbirds over in Kent have had this year, especially with their goaltender. So, I'm looking forward. Playoffs are a whole different animal, so I'm curious to see how the Silvertips team is going to hold up in this year's postseason as opposed to, you know, some of the other ones when they kind of ran into a wall in the second round. So I like what I saw the other night. They got off to a slow start, but I'll tell you what, when they turned it on, they really turned it on, and they've looked good putting the puck in the net their last few games since they acquired all that goal scoring. So, you know, I think this could be their year. But we'll see. Like I said, playoffs, different story.
Jeff Baker of the Seattle Times, thanks for your time and your insight. And again, be safe in El Salvador, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Sounds good.
You can follow Jeff on Twitter at Jeff Baker Times. That is Jeff with a G, G-E-O-F-F, Baker Times, the great sports business reporter for the Seattle Times. He covered the Mariners for many years as the beat writer and now has moved on to all things enterprising in sports business. It was all things hockey, all things Key Arena, and any Seattle Arena issues, of course. We got into most of that here tonight. It was great having Jeff on and his insight. Man, El Salvador, wouldn't that be interesting? Definitely follow him on Twitter and check out Jeff's world travels as he follows the Seattle Sounders in the coming weeks. That's going to do it for this extra long edition of On the Double. Special thanks to guest host Corey Sullivan joining us for the second time tonight, filling in for Sean Boyd. And a big thanks to Jeff Baker of the Seattle Times and, of course, our crack staff at BBS Radio. I'm Sean Wally saying good night on the Double.
Thanks for listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for some more great sports talk and big-time guests on the Double with the Double S Express.